This is Brittany Blackwell, host of the Resilient Teacher Podcast, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, along with this podcast. Each show on the network is independently owned, and the views expressed may not represent those of other podcasts. For the best education podcasts, visit edupodcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back. Steve here, and today I'm talking with Geraldine Woods. Geraldine is an author, English teacher, writing teacher, and blogger. She has written over 50 books and has an amazing blog called Grammarian in the City. She takes a look at signs in and around the area where she lives in New York City. She often finds some that the writer might not have written when he or she thought they had written and wanted the sign to say. Oh, what a funny blog. Great conversation. You're going to love it. You're going to want to go out right away and subscribe to this blog. Yes, you are. By the way, before you go, it'd be so cool if you took time to help out the podcast. And I got three ideas for you. One of those is tell a friend, share the links. Or another one is how about go to my website and leave a review and subscribe. Or finally, how about click on the link on my website homepage to buy me a coffee. By doing this, you could donate a dollar or two to help me address the costs associated with producing the podcast. What do you think? That would be so cool. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing. You are awesome. Enjoy the show.
Yeah, I think that autocorrect or autosuggest is responsible. I had one up recently, criminalized onion relish. And I'm fairly sure that caramelized got turned over by the whatever algorithm the software was using.
It's the Education Podcast, your favorite show, with lots of groovy guests and they share what they know. So crank it up to 10 and let your neighbors know that here's another show with Dr. Steve Mileto. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. With Dr. Steve Mileto.
Geraldine Woods has taught every level of English from fifth grade through adult writing classes. She's the author of more than 50 books, including English Grammar for Dummies, 3rd edition, All-in-One English Grammar for Dummies, and 1001 Grammar Practice Questions for Dummies, 2nd edition, all published by Wiley. She also wrote 25 Great Sentences and How They Got That Way, and Sentence, a Period-to-Period Guide to Building Better Readers and Writers, both published by W.W. Norton. She blogs at www.grammarianinthecity.com about current trends in language and ridiculous signs she encounters on her walks around New York City. Her current favorite sign reads, "Pay inside before entering." Which, this, you're going to find out. You got to make sure you subscribe because this vlog is awesome, and people really should read their signs before they post them. We previously talked on episode 371 about your two books, 25 Great Sentences and How They Got That Way, and Sentence, a Period-to-Period Guide to Building Better Readers and Writers. Our focus today is your blog, Grammarian in the City. Geraldine, thanks so much for being on the show again. Say hi to everyone.
Hi, and thank you so much for inviting me back. I'm quite honored to be here, and I'm glad that you enjoy the blog.
Well, thanks so much for being here, and I'm honored to have you back on, and the vlog is awesome. This is, you just really think sometimes we mean well, but should have had somebody read it and say, does this make sense? Or am I saying what I think I'm saying?
I think that one of the issues for writers of, no matter what you're writing, signs or books or articles or whatever, is that you know in your mind what you mean, but making sure that what you mean is clear to somebody who's not inside your mind is quite a challenge. So often when I see a sign like pay inside before entering, I'm sure the person who posted that had some vision of what was supposed to happen that might even have made sense, but it doesn't make sense to anybody else. So I think that trying to decide what's actually out there for another human being and what's still inside your head, that's a challenge all writers face, regardless of medium.
That's awesome. You're so right. All right, so let's back up just a little bit. And you've written over 50 books. Where'd you get your inspiration to write a book? I mean, 50, that's a lot.
It is a lot, yeah. I think, very early in my career, it was just as simple as paying the rent. So that part faded away. But what has replaced it, I think, is I understand now is that I look at writing as a connection. So I think about what is it that I would like someone else to know? What do I know? And how do I express that so someone else might find it valuable. And then once I have that in my head, like who might read this and what I might be explaining, what I might be saying, then I'm ready. Then all I need to do is just do it. But the inspiration, I think, comes from the desire to make a connection with readers.
That's awesome. Just a note, I have an audience full of educators of all sorts, from those thinking about being educators all the way to those who are working with post-secondary students and beyond, and all in between. But and many of them, I'm sure, at some point have had an idea about writing a book. And that's why I have to ask this next question is, do you believe in writer's block? You know, is there such a thing?
There totally is such a thing, and I often have it. It doesn't sound as if I would have it because I'm fairly prolific, but it does happen to me frequently, and I think I've learned through the years how to get around it. To my mind, that for me, there are two different types. One is whenever I start something new, I sit down and I have to fight myself, and I have to tell myself I can actually do this. I've done it before, because I'll put something on the screen. I generally write on the computer, and then I'll delete it, and then I'll put something up and I'll delete it, and that happens 30 or 40 times until I finally have something that works, and then I'm sort of in the groove. But I think what's going on there is this convincing myself that I do have something to say and I have something that someone else might want to know. The other one comes, I think, when I get totally involved in something I'm writing and I get stuck and I can't see a way around it. The answer then for me is to get up and do something different, exercise, go for a walk, make a cup of tea, just change the way. Then I come back and I'm looking at it differently. And because I'm looking at it differently, then I can probably get around the block, if not through it, and fix it up later.
That's awesome. I appreciate you sharing, because and it's cool to know that, yes, you do have it from time to time. So thanks so much for talking about that. All right. So the last time we talked, we focused on your two books, 25 Great Sentences and How They Got That Way, and Sentence, A Period-to-Period Guide to Building Better Readers and Writers. And the second book is more of a instructional manual about writing better sentences and so forth. And the other one, you share all kinds of great, what you consider to be great ideas expressed in these sentences and thoughts and so forth. And care to do a commercial for them? Because I love these books. By the way, they look great and they read great. They're easy to read. And by the way, in the 25 Sentences book, I mean, you mentioned Monty Python, which is awesome.
The dead parrot sketch.
Yes.
I think, I'm a word nerd. All right. I can make it sound better and say I'm a language enthusiast, but I'm a word nerd. I'm the kind of kid that read the cereal box during breakfast that,
nice.
You know, walked into a wall because I didn't want to stop reading something. So, you know, I do crossword puzzles. I play Scrabble. So this is who I am. And I'm always thinking about language. And I understand now that I always have thought about language. In both books, I'm looking at the smallest unit, in my opinion, that shows a writer's style, which is a sentence. As a teacher, I started out as a teacher looking at big ideas with my classes. And that was sometimes limited because they didn't see the scope of something that I was seeing. So if I started with something small, just one sentence, and let people look at that, my students look at that and think about how it's expressed and how content and meaning go together, and then expand outward and see the larger meaning and what the context is and why that works. So that pretty much explains Sentence, A Period-to-Period Guide. These are all techniques that I used. I used sentences as standalones to kind of spackle a crack in the school day when I had 10 minutes and couldn't really start something new. But I also use them as a basis for a long paper or a long discussion. Start with a sentence and see where that goes, either to teach the kids how to write them or write them more creatively, but also how to read them and how to look at a sentence and think about how it resonates throughout something larger. And then the 25 Great Sentence book comes from a collection I've had through the years of sentences I love. And it's essentially divided into ways of that they're put together. There's a section on structure, writers that surprise you by leading you along a path and then taking a U-turn at the last minute. Jane Austen does that a lot. Or sound, how you can link ideas with sound in a sentence. or negativity, where you can give the opposite of what you mean, making it clear to the reader that you mean the opposite. Why are you using a negative term there? It is not nothing, something like that. Well, why don't you just say it's something? So both of them are really about ways that language interacts with content, which is pretty much what I think about all the time, including in the blog.
That's awesome. And they are awesome books, and they are fun to read. And like I said, you pull out some really cool sentences that are in, you know, I mentioned the dead parrot sketch one, which is just an absurdly funny skit that, you know, there's how many ways can you explain that the parrot is not alive? He's dead that you sold me type thing. And two, you know, very serious sentences that are etched in our history. And I think that is cool too. So kudos on those books. I love them. One of the things that we're going to do here is shift gears, and let's talk about your blog, all right? We introduced everybody to Grammarian in the City, and I love it. I typically cannot hold back a laugh. I mean, it's funny because I immediately want to walk around, and I'll share with whoever's in the building at the time that once, you know, I got to read this, that type of thing. And, you know, why'd you create Grammarian in the City? Let's go there first.
Well, first of all, thank you for the kind words about the blog. I always hope that people will enjoy it because I enjoy writing it. I started it partly to get out of the house. I stepped away from full-time teaching. I'm still teaching. I teach some grammar classes online and I teach writing classes online. But when I first stepped away from full-time teaching every day, all day in the building with the kids, I thought, all right, this is fine. I'll be writing. I had always been writing. But what am I going to do as an alternative to writing? So I thought, well, I'll walk around and I'll take pictures and see what happens of things that I had been looking at for years. And then I just, the absurdity of the way, so the blog often points out mistakes. I want to take a moment to talk about English conventions and mistakes, because some mistakes actually aren't mistakes. I took a picture of one sign somebody had hand lettered with great emotion and posted on the side of a brick building, and it said, "Don't garbage here." So, okay, garbage is not actually a verb, but it's a perfect usage. if this person was so clear, like, this is my spot, I don't want anybody to mess it up. So if you have anything in your mind, whether it be an actual bag of trash or anything else you shouldn't be doing, don't garbage here. So technically that's a mistake, but in fact, it's a very creative use of language. And so that sort of mistake, I think, and I'm using mistake with air quotes around it, is not to be discouraged, it's to be encouraged. But the conventions and the standards of English, which we commonly call grammar, I think those are there so that the message can predominate and the form of it can fade into the background, so that we all know what we're thinking about, and so we're clear that a quotation mark, for example, is supposed to tell you that somebody actually said whatever it is enclosed in the between the quotation marks. We accept that because we want a common way of communicating and understanding each other. And then some of the mistakes, I think, are less helpful. There's a store in my neighborhood that every once in a while, it's a little like a cafe, and every once in a while they'll post a help wanted sign for a grilled man. So first of all, I'm not surprised that people don't stay on that job for very long, because who wants to be grilled? Either in the sense of getting, you know, asked too many questions or sitting on a hot stove. So that probably comes from somebody who's learning a language. I live in New York City, and so many people and so many languages, people that have acquired English at some point in their lives, I have a lot of sympathy for that. I'm fairly fluent in Spanish, but I make some really terrible mistakes, really funny mistakes. I declined an invitation once saying, pitifully, I'm not able to come. I thought it meant unfortunately, which was what my thesaurus was telling me. But in fact, I was really making a fairly silly mistake.
Oops. It is funny, though, because we can, you know, whether we know what we know it is that we meant to say. And this happens a lot in texting, which is even funnier, by the way, because then sometimes the machine corrects you to what it thinks you're trying to say, and then that's not even what you're trying to say. And I think sometimes we work just like the phones.
Yeah, I think that autocorrect or auto-suggest is responsible. I had one up recently, criminalized onion relish. And I'm fairly sure that caramelized got turned over by the whatever algorithm the software was using. And similarly, a sign saying cookies for Santa, for Satan, which came out in the Christmas season. I think it was probably Santa.
Right.
Satan. So that's autocorrect. But also some of the things that I actually have the most fun with are when people are trying to suggest an idea to you and make something marketable that is quite different from the reality. For example, I saw a sign for artisanal fish and bespoke salad. So what does that mean? I think it means that you're paying double what you probably should pay.
Probably right, yes.
It's the same sort of thing where if you see a hand-selected something, what does that mean, really? I saw a sign for a scalp and hair treatment containing 26 minerals. Okay, well, why do you want 26 minerals? And are we talking uranium? Like,
right.
What exactly is included in that? And so they're trying to attract a buyer and entice a buyer to pay more, perhaps, just by the language that's being used. Then I went the same day that I saw artisanal fish. I saw a fairly large supermarket with economy size and low prices was the focus. And their sale was on yellow cheese and oval canned ham. So I thought, well, okay, I'm not getting a lot of information, but at least they're honest.
Right. And you hope that they're just being honest about the cheese, because otherwise, you know, yellow, that could be old, not old in the good way, you know. It's like,
aged cheese.
Yes, aged cheese.
Sell-by date passed last year.
and we cut all our hams so they are in the oval shape. That's our signature. I don't know, you know. It's I like that. It's funny stuff. You have some incredible pictures of signs that you talk about, and you shared with us that you take a lot of these pictures. So besides you taking pictures, do some of them come from friends and colleagues?
Certainly, especially after the blog built up a following, people see it and then they send me things. And I love when people do that. It's another connection. I guess as a teacher and as well, I was always looking for a connection with my class and with individual students. And so it's another way of having the same thing. Most of them I've taken. I have a fairly large backlog at this point. I generally hold on to things and then a theme will suggest itself. And then I'll sometimes pick up something that's been sitting there for a while, and all of a sudden a theme occurs to me, and then I can use it. But I love getting things from readers. I think that's one of the best parts of this.
That's so cool. That's especially because first of all, one of the things I have to respond to is that you said you have a backlog. That's on one level, it's really cool. On another level, that's not good, because that means they're just constantly providing you with the,
it's true,
the that's crazy true. Signs. So that's hilarious. We got to talk about some ones that just about floored me when I read them. One of them is, and I got to say, it's got to be one of my all-time favorite signs. It says, please do not sit or feed the birds. And your comments about this sign is what really made me laugh out loud. Could you talk about this sign a little bit?
Sure. It was sitting atop a very tiny ledge. You'd have to, practically nothing but a bird could sit on it because it was so small. So there's that. But secondly, I've always had parakeets, pet parakeets, and they'll sit on my finger or they'll sit on my shoulder. And all I could think of is, well, how do you sit a parakeet? Like, would I bend their little tiny legs and then the little claws would be in the air? And I don't think my birds would like that. So I don't think that was the meaning that the store owner was intending, but that's certainly the meaning that came through when I looked at it. Don't sit the bird.
I love that. That's so awesome. Especially because the first time I read it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is hilarious. And I was showing it to everybody. This is one that literally made me laugh out loud once I read your words about it, because I envisioned them, you know, trying to make the bird sit. You know, come on. No, don't do that. That's not good. That's, you know, it's a...
Bird does not like that.
No, nice. A more recent sign that you shared said, artist residing in building. And you had some very nice snarky comments about this one. You want to share some of those thoughts?
So this one was, I was downtown and it was a large sign and it was on metal and it had been, you know, it had been professionally made and it was on the side of above an entry to a building. And I thought, okay, are they warning us or are they advertising and bragging, you know, artist residing in building? And I don't know. And that's kind of goes to my point where it's very clear to whoever commissioned that sign. It's just not clear to the rest of the world. So there may be a purpose in there, but I really could not find any, I still don't know why that was there, but it struck me funny. Like sometimes I'll know, like for example, I just bought some ice cream and it's cherry vanilla and it says made with country harvested cherries. And I thought, first of all, okay, there aren't very many cities with cherry orchards inside. Like, where else are we getting the cherries from?
Right.
So, and then, but that one I know. I mean, they're trying to associate this with something healthy,
right,
and country, and that's great. And of course, it's ice cream. So I bought it and I intend to eat it, but I'm not really looking at it. It is the most healthful thing that I can do.
But
artist residing in building, I still don't know what that's supposed to mean.
It's so funny because it literally is like missing beware artist residing or a sign that says artist residing in building and the name of somebody or something. But,
right,
you know, it's
right.
Like,
we have nabbed this famous artist.
Right, exactly.
We are creative. Artist residing in building. Also that it was singular. Like if it said artist residing in building, I would think perhaps they are trying to say, well, this is a place that welcomes creativity and we have a flexible space that an artist may need, but just that singular, it was just so odd.
It's awesome. It is odd. That's a curious one there. One of the things I got to mention is oftentimes you're finding signs that have left out punctuation or used a hyphen or an apostrophe where there shouldn't be one. One of my favorite blogs that you have shared is the title of it is Apostrophe. Sigh. Could you talk about the misuse of apostrophes?
Well, if I were the queen of grammar and I could somehow wave a magic wand and change the rules, I think I'd get rid of apostrophes because we'd probably understand the meaning just from the sound. But they exist. And because they exist, we have to deal with them. And most people don't deal with them very well. People often use them to make a word plural, and they're not actually used for that, except in very, very small number of cases. Too technical for this. But if you leave them out and the meaning can change and that can be fun. But one of my favorite ones there was grandma's punch. And I thought, okay, well, I'm a grandma. Who would I punch? Well, if you don't want to look at any more pictures of my wonderful granddaughters, then I might consider that feeling. I'm actually a very nonviolent person, but I could maybe be considering a punch. So things like that. I think the apostrophe is just an overrated punctuation mark, but we're stuck with it.
That's awesome.
I think more fun these days is exclamation points. There was a little grocery store in my neighborhood some time ago, and the name of the grocery store was either five or six exclamation points. That was the name of the business. It's now out of business, and I can't say for sure that it's because they had such an unpronounceable name. But I did wonder, like, how do you answer the phone? Like, what do you say? Hello, this is... Or how do you fill out your tax documents? Where do you file it in alphabetical order? It's just so many things come to mind with that. So I think leaving something out or putting something in that shouldn't be there is both can be a source of humor and also of miscommunication.
It's so funny because being one who tends to use exclamation points in sentences where my wife has said to me sometime, have you ever thought about reading what you write out loud? Because that would really be a loud sentence. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm just thinking that I want to show that I'm excited that, you know, or whatever. And she said, well, I think you've accomplished that right there. And so that really, when you write about exclamation points too, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, what is it that I do? You know, in another post titled Punctuation Puzzles, you look at signs that have placed quotations around some words in the sign. It's almost like the sign writer is using air quotes. Could you talk about what is wrong with this?
Yeah, that it's interesting. Quotation marks have a curious relationship with truth, because on the one hand, they're supposed to let you know that what they enclose represents the exact words of someone speaking or someone's writing. So that's supposedly truth, although you can certainly extract something like, you know, an awesome failure and say the movie was awesome. And so technically you're quoting, but you're not actually giving a sense of what the person was saying. They also have they also are distancing. They call them distancing or disclaimer quotations, where you put it around, like, we listened to his music and our ears bled. So the air quotes there saying that he may call it music, but we don't agree. So it's a kind of distance. This is not true, is what you're saying. I have seen them lately as used just for emphasis. And that's probably something I should mention. Language does change through the centuries, changes, and it should change. Think of it as a wiki. Everybody's adding and trends are gathering. So the trend these days seems to be to use quotation marks as emphasis. I don't think it's a good idea, frankly, to adopt this practice if people are not sure what you mean. I passed a pub and there was a sign outside saying, we're celebrating our 100th anniversary, and 100th was in quotation marks. And I thought, well, are they like 2-3 years old and they're just joking about this? Or do they think they're saying 100th? We've been here a century. And I still don't know. And I think when you decide that you're moving the needle on what language means, you have to be a little careful that your reader or your listener will not understand what you're trying to get across, what your message is.
That's awesome. You know, we kind of think it's 100. We're not sure.
Right.
I like that. That's... because that is something that people have a tendency to emphasize. And I've always thought about it is when you do that, that you're like using a segment of something else from somebody's writing or something like that. But to emphasize it, you definitely point out some that are hilarious because you're not sure what they're talking about. good stuff. You know, in another favorite of mine, you share signs that are confusing. For this example, the sign that says, please do not push the door. And on the glass right next to this sign is a sticker on the glass that says push.
Right.
It's like, you know, it's like, you know, you think they take that off. In the same article, you share a sign that says stop here on red signal. And right below that sign is another sign that says no stopping anytime. Let's talk about confusing signs for a minute.
I think that, first of all, the stop, don't stop one is in front of the United Nations. And it's still there. It's been there at least 10 years that I know.
Wow.
And I think that, you know, people driving past the United Nations, they may have 4 or 5 different languages that are floating around inside their minds. And do you really want someone to stop for a second and say, am I supposed to stop my car here or should I not stop my car here? I mean, I don't know the accident rate at that particular spot, but I would imagine that you're in peril when you're passing by there. I think that probably comes from 2 different agencies or 2 different groups of people or individuals, both putting something up without looking at what's already there. So there's this, you know, they're fighting with each other. They probably don't even know it. It's like, my job is to hang the sign. I don't really care what's next to it. I think that might be part of the... But it is a good reason to proofread.
It sure is. Wow. And not only that, it's like, could you not read that you attached it? I mean, because those two are like on the same signpost. It's like, come on. Can you not read the one above you? At least go tell somebody, hey, we got to say we're no longer allowing stopping here or something. I don't. that makes it even funnier. It's like, nice. It's, hey, you know, we got to put this sign up here. Just put it up there. It'll work. Nice. All right. Good stuff. Yeah. So do you have a favorite sign that you've made a comment about?
You know, I it changes. I always have a favorite, but it changes often. Right. I saw recently bus stop, pick up and drop off only. And I thought, okay, what else are you going to do at a bus stop? And build a house and live there? I mean, It's like, and this too is a professional job. The ones that really get me, I mean, if it's somebody's hand lettered thing, okay, they're in a hurry, whatever. But if it's something that somebody had to commission and it had to be made and enameled and then somebody had to put it up, you think at some point or another, somebody would have said, okay, just say bus stop, whatever the bus number is that stops there, because pick up and drop off only is pretty much the definition of a bus stop. Nice. So that's my favorite at the moment. Last week, there I saw one, no dogs, cats, or pot-bellied pigs allowed. It's oddly specific.
It's very specific, yes, geez.
Is there like one person who tried to go in with a pot-bellied pig and now there's a blanket prohibition? I still don't know the answer to that one either. And I often think, I don't actually do this, but I think that these could be short stories. I mean, you could start with a sign and you could write a novel based right. on where this came from.
That's
and
funny.
Who related to it.
I like that. There's some communities that I've drive through, and one is very famous in an area because it has a fruit stand there where they sell during the summer months. And if you go down this highway that used to be like the, you're going down the back roads. Now they've widened it. They're getting ready to two lanes. Now they've added two more lanes. So it's not going to be as off the road as it used to be, but in big letters, it spells the word in a funny hand. It's not professionally done. It's somebody getting out a paintbrush and painting P-E-C-H-E-S.
Okay, paging A.
Yes, kind of forgot the A's gone and never there, and I'm pretty sure they just decided, well, it's up there now. It's red letters on top of white, and it's like, oh well. But every time I read that one, it's like nice. It's one of the things that you've mentioned, because you've talked about why people make mistakes. Some of it might be learning the language, and some of it might be that they're in a hurry. And you've even talked about sign companies that did you read what you said? I mean, what do you think do you think there's like an overall theme with some of it? Because you obviously have, you don't have to look far for some new material.
I get new material, but pretty much every time I take a walk. Actually, one of the things that's most difficult, I don't want to embarrass people. So I try to crop the photos. So I take the name of the business out if I can. And I also don't want people to say, why are you taking a picture here? And because, people are well-meaning, they're trying, and I don't want to look down on them. I've struggled to learn some foreign languages that are foreign to me, and I understand what that is. So I'm trying to be careful about that. But I think there's a lot of material for because people just don't actually consider often exactly what they're saying, or they do consider it, but then they want to manipulate. I'd much rather have the first one than the second one. I think the idea that language can be used to trick you into something is problematic, but it does happen. Orchard harvested cherries is a benign example of that. But I think that language can shape the way we perceive something. So we need to be careful how we use it.
It makes sense. Makes sense. And it is something like, there's a reason why I've never taken a picture of the one I described to you, because I would literally have to pull. Why do you think he's over there taking a picture? I mean, it's, so I don't want it to go that direction, but it is interesting when you find the different signs and stuff, but I just think it's funny that you have a non-ending source of of material there. So you got a big wide city. We're coming close to finishing up, Geraldine. If someone wanted to follow up and connect with you, read your blog, where are you going to send them?
Well, I would love for people to read the blog. It's grammarianinthecity.com. There's a way to comment there. I read all the comments and then I approve them before I post them. So there might be a small time lag, but not much. But certainly that's a good way to find me. I do some online teaching. I teach grammar for the Society for Technical Communication, and I teach writing classes for Hugo House. It's in Seattle, but they're online classes because I'm in New York, a continent away. So people can find me through either of those two organizations if they would like.
Very cool. So I'll put information in the show notes about how to connect with you, as well as those websites and that'll be awesome. So, you need to reach out, because she does, if you read one and you like what you say, you need to comment, and she will comment back, which is cool. So, good stuff. We've got, all right. So I got a couple questions I want to ask you that are just to kind of finish up. If you were at a conference sharing your thoughts about writing, what is something that you would want to tell an audience of beginning writers about the writing process?
I would say, don't give up. Don't judge yourself. Try and spill it out, and then go back later when you're had a little bit of distance and time, and look at it again and see how you want to shape it or how you want to change it. But I think if you try to edit yourself while you're creating, those two processes don't go well together. So send your editor somewhere for a cup of coffee and let the writer just spill it, and then bring the editor back and send the writer out for a snack and let the editor punch it into shape. But mostly don't give up. Sometimes people will see me writing, because I do a fair amount of revision sitting on park benches, things like that. And they'll say, first I get, what are you doing? And if I say I'm a writer, they might say, well, you're so lucky. Well, I'm lucky in that I've been able to find a way to get things out there, but I'm not lucky. I just do it. And I think that I think that you can do it too. I firmly believe that people have thoughts that they can express in writing, and they just need to be encouraged to try that and not discouraged if it doesn't immediately come out perfectly.
That's awesome. Love it. Last question. Do you have a favorite author or writing genre? If so, what or who?
Oh, I have so many. I'll limit myself to two for fiction and two for nonfiction. For fiction, Toni Morrison and Virginia Woolf. I think they're amazing. For nonfiction, Robert Caro, biographer, and Ian Fraser, who writes both humor and other serious nonfiction pieces. I think they're just, all four of them are masters at what they do.
That's so cool. Thanks for sharing. And Geraldine, thank you so much for talking about your blog, Grammarian in the City. I love it. It makes me laugh. I've commented a few times back when some of that happens. And, it's such a great way to start the day. And I do have to say that it makes me reread any and all of my flyers, emails, and memos that I write. Because it's like, did I really say what I thought I was saying? Wishing you the best in all you do.
Well, thank you so much. It's been an honor to be here. I always enjoy your podcast, and I'm thrilled to be on it again.
Hey, you have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast to help you help kids achieve their dreams. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a member of the podcast network based in Canada called Voice Ed Radio. Voice Ed Radio, your voice is right. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and host. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Hey, thanks for listening. It would be awesome if you visited my website at stephenmaletto.com and connected with me, left a review, and listened to more episodes. And by the way, you could also share it with your friends, with your family, and your colleagues. Thanks so much. You're awesome.